Thank you. Chair and members of the panel, we act for 7 survivors of sexual abuse at Ashdown House, 3 survivors of abuse at Sherborne, St George's and St William's respectively. In the short time available to us today, our clients have asked us to highlight a number of points arising from your narrative report. Firstly, our clients welcome the scrutiny which the inquiry is bringing to bear on the schools they attended and at which they were abused. Whilst a number of our clients are pursuing civil claims, you will be aware that one of the frustrations of the civil justice process is that it generally provides only very limited opportunities to explore the wider context in which abuse takes place, the character and culture of the institutions concerned, and the many mechanisms by which abuse can be covered up. So this scrutiny by the inquiry is welcome. At the same time, our clients feel a considerable degree of frustration at the limitations of that scrutiny, and they would have wished that it could have been developed much further. Secondly, it is important to state that in relation to at least some of the schools examined in this report, the term closed schools is really a misnomer. Both Ashdown House and Sherborne continue to exist today. Of course, their legal structure has changed. In changing their legal status since the abuse which took place, Ashdown and Sherborne have done the same as many independent schools have done. Indeed, it would be true to say that most independent schools have changed their legal status in some way in the past few decades. A change of legal status may be effective in certain circumstances in frustrating civil claims, and indeed, in some cases, it may have been done with precisely that purpose in mind. It does not, however, mean that the institution has changed in substance. Ashdown is a very good example of an institution which changed legal status, but in fact exhibited a great deal of continuity across those changes. As you know, Ashdown's deputy headmaster from 1969 to 1974, and then headmaster from 1974 onwards, was Clive Williams. As you explain in your report, in 2009, Ashdown House was bought by the Cotthill Trust. The Cotthill Trust bought the school in part from Clive Williams, who had part owned it along with his predecessor as headmaster. The wording of your report implies a full separation between the pre- and post-2009 administrations at the school. However, this is not quite the case. The founder and the head of the Cotthill Trust until 2017 was Adrian Richardson. He was a friend of Clive Williams, and he also served as a senior teacher under Williams at Ashdown, and also as a governor at Ashdown. So there was not, in fact, the full separation of interests between the two administrations that the report might seem to suggest. This goes to a broader point about many independent schools. Even where legal status changes, there may be important continuities amongst the personnel involved. This means that the culture, character and values of the supposedly new entity would be very similar, if not the same, to those of the previous version. This is an important issue across the independent school sector, because many independent schools which have experienced abuse scandals are now trying to persuade you that they have changed fundamentally from the bad old days. In assessing those claims, it is crucial to look beyond changes in legal structure or identity and to examine whether the people involved in reality remain the same and whether the new regime has continuities with the old one. A change of legal status or a change in ownership does not equate to a change in culture. Thirdly, your narrative report identifies certain limitations arising from the lack of witness evidence. We want to stress that whilst this point may be relevant to some of the institutions being examined, this is not in fact the case with Ashdown House, Sherborne and St William's. When we look at Ashdown House, clearly Clive Williams is a central witness. As you know, he was the employer and supervisor of Martin Haig, the teacher convicted in 2017 of assaults on children at Ashdown over several years. And by the way, Haig did 2 stints at Ashdown, not one, as stated in the report. Williams was responsible for sacking Haig in 1975 after parents and children complained of his assaults. As you know, Williams did not inform the authorities, and Haig went on to offend at least one more school. But on the point about witness evidence, to the best of our knowledge, Clive Williams remains alive today. He has certainly been alive during the currency of your investigation. And we know of several other ex-teachers from Ashdown who were present at the time of the worst abuses and who remain alive today. Similarly, some significant allies of Lindsay at Sherborne, including the man who enabled him to sell the school, Canon Eric Woods, are alive and well. so it is important not to assume that a lack of witness evidence in relation to some schools applies to all schools covered in your report. I then turn to St George's and St William's. Many children at both of those schools, including our clients, experience severe abuse. But the point I want to highlight here is, as far as those institutions are concerned, the system for compensating proven victims has failed lamentably. In regard to St George's, the school only had insurance in respect of a small part of the period when the abuse occurred. For much of the period, the school was uninsured. The result is that while civil claims have notionally succeeded, many victims have received either no payout at all or a payout that only represents a small fraction of the total award. Many victims have now been waiting for years to find out whether any sums can be recovered by the liquidators of the company which ran the school. The fact that a significant number of our clients cannot obtain justice because of the lack of insurance or because of an inability to identify an insurer is a significant issue. And whilst it is not directly referred to in your closed schools report, it is nonetheless relevant to your work, and therefore I propose to make a few observations about it. Firstly, we note that the inquiry in its interim report of April 2018 recommended that the Association of British Insurers consider whether a register of public liability insurers could be introduced to assist claimants in child sexual abuse cases in locating the insurers relevant to their claim. We agree with the inquiry that a register of public liability insurers is vitally important and much needed. It could be organised in a similar way to the Employers Liability Tracing Office, or ELTO, which was set up to provide claimants in employers' liability cases access to a centralised register of employers' liability insurance policies through an online inquiry facility. Secondly, the problems our clients and other victims and survivors of abuse have had because of lack of insurance in these cases shows the urgent need for an insurer-funded compensation scheme of last resort. One possibility for the inquiry to consider is something along the lines of the mesothelioma compensation scheme, which was established by the government in the Mesothelioma Act 2014. This scheme was set up by the government to combat the problem of sufferers of the asbestos-related cancer, mesothelioma, being unable to trace the employer's liability insurers of defunct companies that negligently expose them to asbestos dust. In mesothelioma cases, because the exposure to asbestos occurs many decades before the cancer develops, often the companies that expose the employee to the asbestos dust no longer exist and insurers cannot be found. This is analogous to abuse cases where survivors of abuse, for understandable reasons, often take many decades to come forward and report their abuse, sometimes meaning that there is no organisation left to sue. The mesothelioma payment scheme is funded by a levy on insurance companies and is a fund of last resort, which only pays out if no relevant employer or insurer can be traced. We say that something very similar could and should be set up by the government, again funded by the insurance industry, to provide a scheme of last resort in cases where victims and survivors of abuse have been abused at uninsured institutions or at institutions where, due to the passage of time, insurance just cannot be traced due to the lack of a centralised register. This would provide victims in this situation some justice and redress, which they so rightly deserve. As far as St William's is concerned, you will be aware that a group action by former children at the home has been running for many years. In 2012, the Supreme Court decided that vicarious liability for the operation of the school was shared between the De La Salle Order and the Diocese of Middlesbrough. That was 7 years ago. Despite that decision, not a single victim of abuse at the home has yet been compensated. Our client, A42, was raped by Brother James Carragher. Carragher was convicted of raping him in 2004. That was 15 years ago. As a result of the abuse, he has suffered serious psychological harm and rectal bleeding. So his abuse has been proved in the criminal court. It clearly happened in the home, and the damage is well evidenced. Yet as a result of the way in which the group action has proceeded, our client has yet to receive any compensation. Indeed, it will not be until November of this year that the defendants are even required to lodge a defence in his case. The story of the litigation has to be seen to be believed. It is like something out of a Dickens novel. In your report on accountability and reparations, you identified some serious problems with the current system of civil litigation. Many of the cases you expressed concern about were group claims, where large numbers of victims are seeking compensation. The issues to do with civil litigation are complex, and we know that you are looking at these in a separate hearing. Not every aspect of the system is failing. But the point which now seems incontestable is that the current system for dealing with group claims is just not fit for purpose. It simply cannot be right that a proven victim of serious abuse at St William's is still waiting for compensation after all these years. It impacts hugely on his ability to put these appalling events behind him and achieve some kind of closure. It is completely unacceptable, but it is the reality of group litigation for some abuse survivors in this country today. So this needs to change. And there are other changes needed as a result of the issues identified in your report. As we have already said, the civil justice process often provides only limited opportunities for a proper examination of the failings within a school. At the same time, you will have heard much already in this inquiry, and in the next 2 weeks you will hear even more about the failings of regularity and inspection agencies. That issue comes across very starkly with Sherborne. As your report identifies, in 1985, the police were concerned about events at Sherborne and specifically about Lindsay's behaviour. They referred the matter to the Independent Association of Preparatory Schools, IAPS, and asked them to examine the situation. At this time, IAPS had on its governing board three headmasters of schools implicated in child abuse: Robin Lindsay himself, Clive Williams of Ashdown, and its chair, Robin Peverett of Dulwich College. Peverett himself was convicted in 2002 of indecent assaults on 9 children at his school. Perhaps unsurprisingly, the action taken against Lindsay was entirely inadequate and the DfE closed the file. This happened in the 1980s, but we cannot be confident that things are different now. If one thing is clear from all of the evidence now available, it is that agencies such as ISI and Ofsted have been far too ready to take the self-presentation of some institutions at face value. Time and again in this inquiry, we have seen how an abuse scandal comes to light, and then we then find that the inspection reports for the years immediately preceding the revelations of abuse paint the institution as one where all is well. This suggests a systemic failure at the level of the inspection agencies. This is an issue which goes to the heart of your residential school's investigation, and it suggests in our view that the inspection system needs substantial reform. Finally, we come to the most important lesson of all. It is clear from your report that in many instances, abuse was known about to those within the institution, but that there was a failure to report it externally. As we've already identified, Ashdown House is one of many examples. When multiple allegations surfaced against Haig, he was not initially suspended, but was allowed to continue in post till the end of term, as Clive Williams admits. Williams then failed to inform the authorities and Haig went on to abuse elsewhere. The stark reality is that these things could happen again now. The UK remains unusual amongst Western countries in failing to mandate the reporting of abuse to statutory authorities and in failing to apply meaningful penalties to those who fail or refuse to report. It astonishes many people to discover that, even now, after years of scandal in institutions, it is possible for staff to cover up institutional child sexual abuse and yet not to experience any criminal penalty as a result. You have seen the implications of that in many parts of the inquiry. This situation simply cannot be allowed to continue. To date, you have held 2 seminars on mandatory reporting. We submit that you now have an overwhelming body of evidence which indicates the need for change in the law to embrace mandatory reporting. The information supplied in this narrative report today in our submission reinforces that case. For our clients, the clock cannot be rolled back, and the abuse cannot be erased from their lives. You have the opportunity as an inquiry to ensure that the chances of it happening in the future are much reduced. Mandatory reporting is a key part of that work, and we look forward to your recommendations in due course. Thank you.